Hi, this is Bennett Kelly. Thanks for listening to Cyber Law and Business Report. Before you take a recess to hear the latest internet law news and commentary, you are hereby ordered to download the WebmasterRadio.fm mobile app for iPhone and Android. Okay, maybe not ordered, but why not? You can listen live to my show and all our show hosts every day on our live stream or download past episodes with ease. So download the WebmasterRadio.fm mobile app in the iTunes Store or in the Google Play Store. It's an open and shut case.
All rise.
Welcome to the Cyber Law and Business Report. Get the top story on the hot-button internet legal topics of the day. This is your home for the latest on internet law and policy. Hear the latest net trends impact business and have your questions answered right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report. Now, please welcome your host, the founder of the Internet Law Center, Bennett Kelly.
Good morning and welcome to the first show of the third season of Cyber Law and Business Report. And we are now in session. Please be seated. This is Bennett Kelly talking to you live from the Internet Law Center in Santa Monica, the heart of Silicon Beach. And we hope you had a wonderful holiday season. And we hope this will be a great new year for all of you. 39 years ago today, we became a nation of lawbreakers, because that is when President Nixon signed the law setting the maximum speed limit at 55 miles per hour. Although I'm sure some of you may not fit in that category, that would not be me. Today is also the 7th anniversary of the tragic Sago mine disaster that killed 12 miners in West Virginia. Birthdays today include Tia Carrera, Christy Turlington, Paz Vega, Kate Bosworth, Oscar winner Cuba Gooding, Show Me the Money Jr., and the only senator I almost accidentally killed, the late Barry Goldwater. So today we're going to give you a preview of the upcoming New Media Expo, also known as Blog World, which is opening in Las Vegas next Sunday through Tuesday. I will be presenting on legal issues affecting bloggers, as will our first guest, Gordon Firemark. And we're going to preview the upcoming show and discuss some of the latest developments in blog law. In the second segment, we'll give you a preview of the upcoming year ahead and what to expect for in terms of legal developments on the internet. So first, let's introduce entertainment and media law, helping clients in entertainment, new media, internet, and technology industries achieve their dreams by offering a comprehensive package of legal, business affairs, and consulting services. And he is the producer and host of Entertainment Law Update, a podcast for artists and professionals in the entertainment industries, and is author of the podcast, blog, and New Media Producers Legal Survivor Guide. And Gordon also teaches at Theater Law at Southwestern Law School and Business Law at Loyola Marymount University, and presents to groups all over the country, and including those of us at Blog World. So, Gordon, welcome to the show. It's good to have you.
Hi, Bennett. Welcome. Thank you. And you almost make me believe my own PR.
That's the objective. So, Gordon, and you're calling in from?
I live in the Santa Clarita Valley, just north of L.A., where I have my office.
And so we have a Southern California-based show for the first segment. And although we're based in Webmaster Radio is based in Fort Lauderdale, and Happy New Year, by the way, to our producer Brent Brasco. So Gordon, it's great to have you on. Now you have an interesting background. You actually started off. I mean, you're in entertainment law, but you started off in entertainment.
Yeah, I actually, it's sort of an interesting story. As a kid, I was sort of hanging with the wrong crowd. I was in junior high, and the principal of the school spotted me and said, I'm going to divert this kid. And he got me involved in doing the lights and sound for the school variety shows and things like that. So I started doing that, and I must have been 12, 13 years old, and did that all the way up through high school, began working professionally in theater, and then went off and went to college and majored in radio, television, and film. And then law school was sort of an afterthought that came up when the Writers Guild went on strike in the late 80s.
And And so it must come as a surprise when you see your clients, when they actually find that the lawyer they're talking to actually is a brethren, so to speak.
I think it makes me good at what I do. I'm able to understand their business from, you know, more than just the legal angles and sort of, you know, I know what it is they do every day.
So you're going to be speaking at Blog World on, the 10 cases every blogger or podcaster needs to know?
Yeah, just a sort of survey of the legal issues that come up through a look at some of the more recent cases in podcasting. I'm in the podcasting track, so that's sort of the focus, but podcasting, blogging, new media production generally.
When is your talk?
I'm actually speaking on another panel about social media as well, but they're both on the 8th. I guess that's Wednesday.
Tuesday
the 8th.
Actually speaking that afternoon as well.
I think we're speaking at the same time. I'm at 3 something in the afternoon on Tuesday. So,
OD on legal issues.
they loaded all the lawyers on the last day, I think, because if you're going to bore them on the last day, not the first day, right?
And also by then, maybe they'll have plenty of alcohol for the party, and that maybe will induce people to want to listen to us. Mm-hmm. But what we were talking earlier offline about what might be interesting to people who are bloggers who are then thinking about what is their potential legal exposure. And as lawyers, I'm sure you get the same question, that famous, can I be sued? And when I ask, I have various, smart ass versions of response, but can you breathe? is the sky blue? But I guess in the blog world, that might be the answer to that might be surprising.
Yeah. My sort of pat answer also is, anyone can sue anyone anytime for any reason. It's a question of can they win if they sue. But the problem is, of course, that, if you get sued and you have to defend yourself, that can be a 5 or 6 figure little adventure that you end up going on for the next year or two. So, the idea is don't give them any good reasons to sue you. And for folks in this arena, it hasn't been a huge issue for bloggers and podcasters up until the last year or two. But in the last year or two, we've really seen a growth in the number of lawsuits and threats and things over content, over the branding of shows and blogs and things like that. And it's become a real threat. I think that's, as you said in our conversation earlier, that's evidence that these media are coming into their own.
I think so. I think people are paying attention to it. In fact, I worked with Brasco. We did a show prior to this called Inbox. Mm-hmm. And our debut show elicited a 6-page letter from the person who we were talking about, full of objections to what they claimed we said, but people do pay attention, and I think blogs are becoming more influential, and there's actually money consequences to what a blog can say now.
Yeah, well, if you think about the way you operate now. I don't know about you, but I haven't picked up a Yellow Pages in a good long time. If I want to find out how to contact a business, I go online and I search for the business's name. And, hopefully the business is the first one that pops up in the Google search or whatever search engine I'm using. But often as not, there's a Yelp review right next to it. And who knows, what other kind of blogs people are talking about that business on. That's where the trouble starts sometimes.
I was contacted by a reporter and about the Yelp lawsuits and explained how Yelp basically had liability for the reviews there. And so he said, so those lawsuits are going to go away. And I said, no, of course not. I said, it doesn't mean people still won't make mistakes and still won't pursue frivolous litigation. But but as long as they feel a need to be vindicated, they're going to go after Yelp but they're going to lose.
Yeah, until Yelp wins a few of those really big ones that everybody starts to hear about, then there are still going to be lawyers out there willing to take those cases or plaintiffs to take it to small claims court.
Now, if I'm a blogger, and let's say we have a, one of our favorite guests is in York, Maine. Mm-hmm. And happy New Year to you, Jane Hitchcock, if you're listening. But so that's you know, one of the extreme parts of the United States in terms of, you know, distance from the rest of the country. And it's, although it's very pretty. And I'm just posting a blog on whatever, weather or politics. And I bet you a lot of people who do blog in areas like that or anywhere, mm-hmm. surprised to find that they could end up in court in Texas or some other place in the country, if not possibly even in Canada.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, this is the first year law school stuff about the subject of jurisdiction. And it raises some interesting issues in cyberspace because we don't necessarily have a real presence in another state, even though we can be seen and heard and read in those other states. The truth is, it's not that different from if you publish a newspaper, except that with a newspaper, you're shipping copies to that other state. Here, it's on the internet. It's, you know, people can access it, whether you like it or not, from those other places. So the questions that come up are, you know, which state, where, you know, what does it take for a person to be amenable to or subject to a lawsuit in another state. And, those of us in the audience that are lawyers will remember the case of International Shoe Company versus Washington. This one was a Missouri company. The shoe company wanted to had some sales operatives in the state of Washington, but didn't maintain a place of business there. Their salesmen were commissioned people who happened to be residents of Washington. They, you know, went around and did their sales process. But International Shoe, the company itself, didn't maintain a location or a physical presence in the state. Washington wanted to tax them. And when the state sued them in Washington state court for back taxes, the company said, wait a minute, you don't have any ability to serve us. We don't have a physical presence there. There's no due process in this. And the case went to the United States Supreme Court, which decided basically that, look, that due process requires that in order to subject a defendant to a judgment for in-person jurisdiction, you don't have to be present as long as you have certain minimum contacts with that state so that the idea of the lawsuit doesn't offend what they say traditional notions of fair play and substantial justice. And then you have cases following that said, you know, that means that the company must have sort of purposefully availed itself of the company, of the state's services or just made itself present in such a way. In the internet space, what we're seeing is the question of, is a blog enough contact? Even if that blog is talking about somebody in that other state, is that enough contact with that state? And the courts seem to be saying, no, not just by itself. The speech itself isn't going to be enough to get you into court there. But if you're advertising or selling products in that state or soliciting response from that state, those kinds of things do tend to lean toward the court exercising jurisdiction.
But let's say I'm in York, Maine, and mm-hmm. I write something about the Dallas Cowboys. They say they suck.
Yeah.
Or, you know, they're not America's team, they're the devil's team. You know, something obnoxious.
Yeah.
And would that push me closer to maybe being subject to jurisdiction in Texas?
I don't think in and of itself you're going to be subject to Texas jurisdiction, especially because we've got the First Amendment. There's free speech stuff going mm-hmm. on in that scenario. But I think that, if you had ads on the website and the you were targeting Texas customers, that would point you in that direction. If you had teased the show saying, hey, we're going to be talking all about the Dallas Cowboys this week and we have, I don't know, some Dallas-based business as our sponsor this week, maybe that starts to get you there because you're definitely sort of doing business with Texas for those purposes. But again, it's a high hurdle to jump over.
And then let's assume they reached the hurdle, although yeah. they did it on Sunday when they lost to the Redskins and didn't mm-hmm. make the playoffs. But let's assume that's the case.
Okay.
And there's still the question of what's the proper venue.
Yeah. Yeah, there's this notion of the inconvenient forum for cases that are brought, you know, at a distance from where the defendant is located. Generally, though, if a state exercises jurisdiction over the parties, that inconvenient forum thing is only going to take you so far as other forums within that state, you know, other venues. So the idea behind that is, you can't get a fair trial in Dallas County, so they move you out to, you know, Midland or something like that, where you have the trial. And that's more involved in the criminal end of things and civil suits where the parties are sort of notorious. In the federal arena, if there's enough at stake, it's possible for a defendant to drag the case into the federal courts out of the state courts under what's called diversity jurisdiction, and then perhaps make a motion that even though the jurisdiction is proper, the venue isn't. But I haven't seen a lot of those arguments happening yet.
Not yet, but we're going to be back talking more with Gordon about blog law issues after these messages from our sponsors. You're listening to Cyber Law and Business Report on webmasterradio.fm.
Stay tuned for more of the Cyber Law and Business Report after this brief recess for our sponsors. Rise, Lynx, and Web Indexes. Take a bow to the largest link map in the world, Majestic SEO. Majestic SEO wields its virtual sword with speed and accuracy to deliver detailed reports of your company's link data and that of your competition. Let Majestic SEO make you your own king of internet marketers and join the crusade of clients and agencies that have chosen the noble choice for link intelligence. MajesticSEO.com. Maximize ROI to use your time and let Majestic wield its mighty sword. MajesticSEO.com. It's good to be king.
Johnson, what's this mantis I keep hearing about? Do we need to call an exterminator?
No, sir. Moby Mantis is our new SMS marketing tool.
SM what?
SMS. Text messaging. Moby Mantis lets us communicate directly with our customers in real time. We can send promos, coupons. It even lets our customers market for us by sharing offers with their friends online. It's been great for business.
Sounds expensive.
Actually, I sign us up for an extended free trial. It hasn't cost us a dime.
Good work, Johnson. I guess the only thing we'll be exterminating is the competition.
To get your free extended trial of Moby Mantis, text radio to 21691. That's radio to 21691 for Moby Mantis.
Looking for a white label SEO and social platform for your clients? Think
eBrands.
Free and unlimited SEO audit reports.
eBrands.
Premium Facebook apps and welcome page creators.
eBrands.
Twitter management app, analytics, and mobile site generators.
eBrands.
Let eBrands manage your search and social media campaigns and give you and your clients access to their white label dashboard, which have great reports that will wow your clients and deliver great ROI and results. Try eBrands for 30 days. Go to eBrandsWithAZ.com or call 1-866-625-5717. That's eBrands with a Z for
eBrands.
Webmasterradio.fm. Get addicted. Get ahead.
The best gavel-to-gavel legal news and information on the net is right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report, only on Webmasterradio.fm.
And we're back. This is Bennett Kelly in Cyber Law and Business Report. And often when you're in court, you get admonished to turn off your cell phone and pagers. But since this is radio, we don't have to worry about that. But actually, we encourage you to have them on because we'd love for you to download our mobile app. And so you can take us anywhere you go. So check out the Webmaster Radio mobile app, and you can listen to Cyber Law and Business Report anywhere you go. In fact, you can take me to lunch and will be on you, of course. But any event, we're back with Gordon, and we're talking about blog legal issues. And there's an interesting case that just came down, was just filed, involving Village Voice. Do you want to tell us about it, Gordon?
Well, yeah. the case is Village Voice Media versus Yelp. And the situation is this. Village Voice apparently has managed to register trademarks for the phrase best of in connection with several cities, San Francisco, Miami, St. Louis, Phoenix, and so on. And it now is claiming that Yelp has been creating best of lists and pages on its site that infringe on those trademarks and deceive consumers. And the case was filed in late October, so it's just getting started, basically. But registered trademarks is a pretty tough place to have to start from if you're on the end of this.
Yes. And what's Yelp's response?
I didn't get a chance to look into that yet. I'm still preparing my presentation for NMX, but I was just Googling it while we were in the break, and I'm not seeing a lot of discussion about the response. I imagine that they will have tried to. It's a federal claim, so there's no anti-slap law to worry about. But I imagine they'll make the motions to dismiss the usual 12b-6 and so on motions, and we'll see what happens there. But I suspect they're going to end up having to defend the case and perhaps challenge the validity of those trademark registrations in the first place.
Right, as being, I guess, descriptive or something. It does seem odd.
Or generic,
That you can have best of and not be specific to something.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things about trademark law is you have to have had when you file for a registration, you're claiming that you've been the exclusive user and that your use and registration of the mark doesn't infringe anybody else's rights.
Right.
And the fact is, best of lists long predate.
Yes, they
Village do. Voice Media.
So. And and the old descriptive thing. I always tell people, it'd be like registering cold beer, and you can never do that. Yeah. And so I think that's going to be an interesting case, and they're actually might be risking the validity of their trademarks in that process.
Yeah.
But what are some of the other trends you see coming down more attention is focused on blogs?
Well, I think defamation is the big elephant in the room for bloggers and podcasters and folks that are going on and talking about other folks and businesses and so on, and they need to be careful, of course, about being truthful or having the backup for what they say or being very clear that what they're saying is protected as opinion or something like that. The big cases in the last couple of years have been around one Oregon blogger who her approach, and I'm not going to name names, but her approach to blogging about people was to really trash them, and she'd also go out and register domain names that lined up with the person's name or the business's name and so on, and really sort of flooding the web and flooding the search engines with all of this other information about these folks and doing them some real harm. All but one of her blog posts were held to be protected as opinion, mostly because of the way they were written. And they were sort of, allegations that it was a securities trading firm, that this company was a fraud, and I'll have more information and proof later, those kinds of statements. So the court said that's opinion and it's not actionable as defamation. But there was one that seemed to have a little more detail, and an interesting component of this is that when she defended on that one, she said, wait a minute, I don't have to reveal my sources, I'm a journalist. And the court said, no, you're really not. you're not acting like a journalist, you're not doing things in a journalistic way, you're not presenting a fair and balanced report, and although we can argue about journalism in its
that's
state nowadays.
Statement, yes.
And I have to be careful about fair and balanced maybe being a trademark. So she was not held to be a journalist in that situation. But there are other cases that say that bloggers are journalists. And I think what it really comes down to is, are you behaving like a journalist?
Right.
Following journalistic ethics and guidelines and being balanced in your presentation and those kinds of things. And so if you're out there blogging or podcasting or whatever, taking pains to do it in a fact-oriented, truthful, and unbiased approach is probably the best way to preserve your protection as a journalist. And that protection is against the disclosure of sources and that kind of thing. So,
It does seem that, but also it seems that in the cases that dealing with whether bloggers are journalists or not, it also depends really on the view of blogs of the judge.
Yes,
and if he has somewhat of a dismissive view, and then they're not likely to be considered journalists. And sometimes it was a New Jersey case that, and I forget the details of it, but more or less, because you don't do this, and this, like an offline reporter, then you're not really a journalist.
And in fact, that case involved the definition of journalism in the statute, which sort of didn't include enough of what blogging is at the time. It's an old law, nobody contemplated every citizen being able to post things on the web like that. So,
in terms of your counseling clients on dealing with new media issues, what is the one thing that surprises them the most that comes up and they're like, oh, wow, I hadn't thought about that?
What surprises bloggers and folks the most? I think that it's not so much a surprise as just that they're confounded by the idea of fair use and whether or not they're, taking a 10-second clip from a famous song or something like that is in fact fair use or not. And what I hear over and over and over again is, I heard I can take 10 up to 30 seconds, or I can take 12 bars or something,
or many words, or yes.
And that just isn't the case. But
it's out there. There's this whole sense that there's a mathematical formula for fair use.
And the truth of it is, it's a very complex four-factor balancing test analysis that looks at market forces and the impact on the market for the original and the nature of the original. And you get into these sort of nuances about, again, is it journalism? Is it educational? Is it public interest? Or is it more commercial in its tone? And courts are all over the place on this. Judges and juries are all over the place. And so it's really something that has to be determined in each individual instance. And as I have said, to clients over and over again, is, do you really want to spend the next couple of years of your life and maybe $50,000 or $100,000 arguing about whether or not your use of that 10 seconds of a song was fair use? Or are you better off just going and paying a few bucks for a license, either from that song or for some royalty-free music?
Now, it's interesting. We'll be talking next week at Blog World in Las Vegas, and that's a hot issue, and that comes up all the time. Yeah. And and so it's somewhat, I think, unsatisfying, I think, for the listener to hear the classic lawyer response. Well, it depends. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like, I remember President Truman complaining that about the, I'm dying to meet a one-handed economist. Because it was always, well, on the one hand, it could be this, but on the other. And so I guess it really, what we need to do is just create greater awareness that it isn't a clear formula, and that there are factors. Make sure they understand what the factors are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think I could do a whole hour-long presentation. Probably could talk for 6 hours on what's fair use and review cases and things like that. It's a tremendously complex area that those of us that practice in the field, we're looking at it every day.
And we actually had someone on from American University. They have a Center for Social Media. Yeah. And they actually have guides on fair use that I think are helpful. And they also have a guide on using video.
Mm-hmm.
And so, they're trying to provide some helpful information. And I think there's some best practices available as well. Yeah. And so, there are resources out there. I mean, clearly, you should talk to a lawyer if you're really making a tough call. But there's also resources out there that you can educate yourself.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely want to get out there and research. But also take what you find on the web, take it with a grain of salt and know your source. There are some reputable ones and there are some not so reputable sources for this kind of information. And don't believe everything you read, I guess, is the answer there.
Now, so you're going to be speaking at Blog World on Wednesday. You get there on Sunday, right?
I'm arriving on Saturday, actually. I'm driving out and giving myself a little breathing room on things.
And so if people want to find out more about you and your practice, where should they go?
Well, the website is firemark.com. That's FIREMARK.com. I also have that podcast that you mentioned, entertainmentlawupdate.com. And you can reach me or find me on Twitter at G Firemark. Actually, most social media, G Firemark is my handle, Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, and so on.
And in terms of your podcast, how often is it here?
The show is done once a month. We do a roundup of the news stories of interest to the entertainment industry with some commentary and hopefully some humor from time to time. And, we talk for about an hour and we go over, eight or nine of the more recent cases that have come up in the field of entertainment.
And are you teaching this semester as well?
I have the winter semester off. I teach in the summer and the fall and at different places. And, I'm sort of looking forward to getting some work done.
And, there is that livelihood thing. And what's the next thing for you after Blog World? New Media Expo.
Well, I'm going to be putting on a program called Film Finance Bootcamp, filmfinanceBootcamp.com, and it's basically going to help filmmakers and folks in the independent film area understand how to get themselves ready to ask investors for their money.
Now, I mean, we've actually had someone on the show, a couple of people on the show, getting financing for different projects.
Yeah,
through Kickstarter, but one of them was film. And how prevalent or how useful has Kickstarter been in that space?
You know, I think Kickstarter and the other one that's prevalent in the film area is Indiegogo.
Yes,
two of them are both pretty good at raising relatively small amounts of money. If you're doing a $10,000 or $20,000 short film, Kickstarter and Indiegogo are great. You can probably raise the money to do that. If you're looking for, a $250,000 or more, which is not unusual now for a feature length film of any size. It's hard to raise that kind of money using crowdfunding
right.
sites. That may be changing because early last year we had the president sign the Jobs Bill, the Jobs
yes.
Act, and that provides for some changes in the way securities law works. That will allow for crowdfunding of securities placements. And so up to $1 million, you could theoretically use something like a Kickstarter or an Indiegogo to raise your money where you do actually have a quid pro quo. The investors are investing, not just donating into your project. So that's an exciting opportunity that's coming this way.
And the regs are due out, I think, this month.
Yeah, well, they were supposed to be out last month.
Yeah.
But... the government was a little busy with some fiscal cliff things. Let's hope they do something in the next couple of months so that the next time we have to talk about the fiscal cliff, we're not held up by it again. Another component of the new regulations is going to allow for more public offering, public solicitation of offers for investment. And so we'll see more people building websites designed to attract investors to particular projects. It's exciting.
It's definitely going to be interesting. And I believe there was one major producer who said that they were looking at Kickstarter, but I forget the name. I don't know. But it was someone who's done like large pictures. Yeah. But there was a veteran. Maybe it was a director who just says it's harder for the older directors to get money these days.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know which one you're referring to, but I'll have to go look into that. That's an interesting approach. I do think the size of the budget is really a limiting factor. Even after the new regs go into effect, it's going to be up to $1 million.
Right.
So you're talking about the very low budget movies. The good news is there's a lot of that happening.
There was a watch that, I tell people, they tried to raise $500,000 and they were unsuccessful and said they raised $11 million. And so that is based on a pre-crowdfund act regime where there's no equity. It's all perks.
Yeah. Well, the problem is with the crowdfund act in place, they would not be able to go above $1 million. They'd be stuck.
Oh no, they could still raise the $10 million, but they only give $1 million in equity.
Oh right, yeah.
And so, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I think I forget the name of the watch, but the Pebble watch. I think the Pebble actually makes people question whether they need the crowdfund act, because if I can raise $10 million without diluting myself, as opposed to diluting myself to thinking I can raise that much, Why not do that?
There haven't been a lot of cases or discussion about the issues that come up with that. I mean, is that money that they raised because is it income? Is it taxable? Or is it really gift money to the recipient of the money? Certainly from the donor's point of view, it's a tax deductible donation of some sort. Well, actually,
no, it wouldn't.
Most of these times they're not, because they're getting a watch when they
exactly invest. This is consideration for whatever the perk they're getting. They're paying. I'm paying. We had that's someone right, yeah. on. She had a film, and the idea was, hype contracts go to the doctor all the time and say, "Hey, yeah, this is ailing me," and doctors say, "Listen, it's in your head. Don't worry. There's nothing wrong with you." But at times it's tough. What if the doctor said, "To hell with it. I'll treat you."
Yeah.
And so it was called the treatment, and the whole concept that the treatment can be worse than the disease.
Yeah.
And if you gave a certain amount of money, you could have a disease named after you. And we actually started, we started the segment by saying, this will be the first film to deal with Kelly Brasco syndrome. If I paid the amount, if that got funded, I would have paid so much to have the disease, with my name on it in the movie. And so that wouldn't be tax deductible.
No, I guess not. Oh, you're right. It's consideration for something, a marketing plug of advertising, or add a copy of the movie.
Yeah.
And your name and your credit.
Get a copy of the movie, and then people associate you with disease, which is always a nice thing.
Right. Well, a lot of diseases are named after the doctors that first described them too. So
I just think socially being associated with disease. I kind of remember the Friends episode where Joey was modeling an STD ad.
Right.
And he's, he meets a girl on the subway, and there's him in the ad. And
yeah, that's another interesting area that we're gonna see more of in the internet space, is the outing of people.
Yes,
We had this case with Amazon, which owns IMDb, and this actress suing because they disclosed her true age.
Yes.
And she feels that that's going to hurt her ability to get jobs because she looks younger than she is. I think we're going to see more of that kind of stuff. And, outing of people's sexual preferences was a big deal, 30 years ago. And but I think now we're going to see more of that happening because it's so easy to out somebody on the internet. Well, and telling the truth about people isn't defamation. It's something else. It's
right. And there was that blog about it was a woman in Atlanta, put up a blog about men you shouldn't date. It was something like don't go there, girl, or something like that. I forget the name of it.
Well, and that one's interesting because the information that's being put up there is by not just this blogger but by her users.
Yes,
and she doesn't have control over whether they're being truthful and journalistic in their approach. So,
but then she would have immunity, but the individual people would have it.
Exactly. But so that could be defamation. But if they're telling the truth about someone, is that an invasion of that someone's privacy? Somehow public disclosure of some private facts, or an intrusion into their so-called solitude or something like that. And the cases are sort of all over the map right now on privacy, and it's state law, so each state's going to be a little different too.
I mean, that is a troubling thing. I mean, the very first case I had in cyber harassment involved a woman who they posted. I mean, it was all, none of it was true, but it posted on this website, Dating Psychos, and which, by the way, is not a place to meet your date. for those of you who started writing that down, but the issue was that. It said all these awful things, including that she had an STD. And so, is that as you said, is that a disclosure of private fact that is actionable?
I had a case early in my career that involved, and this is early in the days of the internet, but it was an early sort of a cyber stalking case as well. But this adult film actress came to me because someone had published her home address on the web, an address that she had gone to fairly great pains to keep a secret. And somebody had tracked her down and published her address. And sure enough, she had visitors. This stalker ended up showing up at her door, and that was how they ended up putting an end to that. But, you know, is it, again, it's a private fact. It's a privacy thing. And this was before that Rebecca Schaefer situation where California made it harder to get access to that address information about people.
And that was tragic. And they actually changed, that was what led to the first stalking law.
Yep.
Was that incident. Mm-hmm. So I know we're taking only got a few more minutes of your time. Okay. Anything else you want to highlight before we break?
I think, I mean, we're going to see more DMC takedowns and probably some more counter notices and maybe some lawsuits over that. You know, there was that case with the woman who had posted a video of her kid dancing, and the owners of the music, Universal, went after her, and the court said, well, you know, you have to check and make sure it's fair use before you issue the takedown notice. And that case is, I think, it just finally settled out of, you know, a month or so ago. I think we're going to see more of that kind of thing as sites and posts are taken down improperly. There was the Diebold case was another one that had a wrongful takedown and some serious financial damages, I think, in that one. And then the other areas, you know, the bloggers and folks need to know about the FTC rules on endorsements and advertising.
All right. Well, I want to thank you again, Gordon. It was great having you. I look forward to seeing you in Las Vegas at New Media Expo, Blog World. Next week, we're both on Tuesday. We will be presenting to a rapt audience on blog legal issues. And we're going to take a break. But, Gordon, thank you. I look forward to seeing you in Vegas.
Thank you. My pleasure.
We'll be back after these messages.
Stay tuned for more of the Cyber Law and Business Report after this brief recess for our sponsors.
Building better search engine rankings takes the right formula. Tracking those rankings is super simple. All you need is AuthorityLabs.com. Authority Labs uses automated daily rank tracking tools to monitor your site's performance or leverage their API to build your own tools. No matter what animal-labeled algorithms affect your ranking, you should be using Authority Labs. Unlimited users for no additional cost and white labeling can help keep your clients updated and save countless hours of creating reports. Whether you're running sites with just a few or millions of keywords, what you need is AuthorityLabs.com.
Oh yeah, my day is done. Time for happy hour.
You're already done for the day?
Yeah, because I use CertifiedKnowledge.org. Their PPC tools literally save me hours every day.
How do you keep on top of all of Google's new features?
Easy. With Certified Knowledge, their interactive learning modules keep me up to date. And if there's something I don't know, I can watch their video lessons without having to hunt around the Google help files.
Great. I'm ready to expand my knowledge.
Hi, I'm Brad Geddes. I'm the only leader officially supported by Google to teach the advanced track of the AdWords Seminars for Success. I personally recommend CertifiedKnowledge.org as your one-stop shop for all your PPC needs.
Learn, optimize, connect. Be smart. Go to CertifiedKnowledge.org now.
Do you look at the task of ranking your site at the top of the search engines like you would climbing the top of Mount Everest? It doesn't have to be. TopSEOs.com knows how hard that climb can be, and they can make top ranking a reality. TopSEOs sends you to only the right search vendors and agencies that they know will work for you. Since 2002, TopSEOs.com has reviewed and researched the best search engine marketing agencies and solutions providers. Don't risk the cost of falling off the proverbial peak of search rankings. Let Top SEOs give you peace of mind. TopSEOs.com, the independent authority on search vendors.
Podcasting at the speed of sound. Webmasterradio.fm, the flamethrower. Webmasterradio.fm, we're everywhere.
The best gavel-to-gavel legal news and information on the net is right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report, only on WebmasterRadio.fm.
And we're back for our second segment here in Cyber Law Business Report. I want to thank you again for joining us for the very first show of our third season. It's hard to believe that it was 2 years ago. We launched our first show with Chris Olson from the FTC, and so it's been a fun journey, and I'm glad you're here with us for this segment. I want to give you some updates on what's going on in the internet legal world. But we're going to first start talking about the publication BNA has put out a list of what it perceives as to be the some of the new or emerging issues that we can expect to see happen this year in 2013. And so these may affect you, so wanted to bring them to your attention. One thing that's going to happen, and we covered this a little bit in 2012, is the ongoing ICANN generic top-level domain process. Now, if you recall, there were over 1,000 applications for global top-level domains, and there are a number of them being disputed as under the procedures that are in place. And then at the end of the year, ICANN actually had a drawing for the domains that would get priority for clearance and likely would be cleared in 2013. And interestingly enough, I think only one or none of the top 100 included any English language GTLDs. Instead, it was mostly Chinese and other characters. So, and the top draw was the Chinese character for the Catholic Church. So, but that is going to proceed, and so you're going to start seeing possible trademark issues emerge as brands try to protect themselves from the new approved GTLDs as people start registering under them. You know, particularly if once we start getting into some of the domains that have been filed, such as .sucks, .gripe, you know, there's potential, obviously, for a big concern for brand holders. And we're going to see a continuation of over who has the right to control the internet. As you recall, we ended the year with a discussion of the conference in Dubai with the ITU and the efforts to actually exert authority over the internet. And that's going to be a continuing battle. I think, you know, you have Russia and China and some of the Middle Eastern states who want to be able to exert more control, and particularly and the U.S. is trying to maintain their control through ICANN. And so it's going to be an ongoing tension. And I think it's sad that one of the lessons of Arab Spring was that the internet is something to be feared and controlled, and that seems to be the approach of Russia and China and other countries. And so that's why that seems to be one of the motivating factors. A third issue is going to be a continued battle over copyright issues and the ability to what extent that limits people's ability to innovate. And as well as royalty issues. And we're going to see, for example, Pandora is complaining that internet radio pays a higher copyright than traditional terrestrial radio, and that it's an improper standard to apply to them, and that it's more or less taking most of their revenue. So you're going to see that, and then you're going to see continued efforts to try to address copyright issues. And in 2013, we will have the graduated response will go into effect as ISPs begin to work with copyright holders to try to flag copyright abuses. And so that's going to be proceeding this year, and it'll be ongoing. You also see attempts at legislation. We're going to have a similar battle as we did last year over efforts like SOPA and PIPA. And at the same time, you have the Trans-Pacific Trade Agreement that's being negotiated that many fear will be another ACTA, which drew widespread and global opposition over some of its intellectual property provisions. So that's going to be kind of an ongoing battle that continues from last year. Now, one thing that we saw last year that was really interesting was the states exerting themselves on privacy, and particularly in the mobile field, as we saw in California, and with a lawsuit being filed against Delta Airlines for failing to include a privacy statement in its with its mobile app. And I think we're going to see more states trying to regulate in that area, and the FTC is going to be coming down, I think, in this area They just had their workshop on privacy practices with respect to big data, and they've already sent information requests to a number of big data companies. And I think we're going to see more pushes by the FTC in this area and a more push for do not track. And so privacy is going to be a big issue this year. Finally, and as well as enforcement actions, one issue that's going to come up is really social media. We have seen laws passed last year, for example, in California, that tried to restrict an employer's ability to require the employer to give access to their social media accounts. And this is going to be more tensions or maybe possibility of regulation in this area, particularly when you have workplaces that have, bring your own device. And so what rights does an employer have? Because there have been cases where employers have tried to wipe out and clean someone else's computer and in the process remove their wedding photos, etc. And so what rights does each party have? And it is something that people working in the space need to be aware of. One, you should have a social media policy, but two, if to the extent that you allow people to use their own device, what is the policies you have? What rights do you want to have? Secondly, related to that, who owns the accounts is an ongoing issue. So you need to make, to what extent is an employer or employee using his own account and it happened to be doing work on behalf of the employer, or do you need to give the employee an assigned account so that you retain rights to that account after the employee leaves? And so that's going to be something that continues to get fleshed out through litigation, if not regulation. And this, on an international note, Canada at the end of 2010 passed a spam law, those 7 years after the U.S. had passed theirs, and they still have not issued the regulations to implement it. And that is expected to occur this year, so you actually will start seeing potential enforcement in Canada at some point this year on the email front, and which will be a significant development. So those are some of the things that are coming. Now, in addition to being aware of what's coming, you should be aware of what you got and prepare yourself. And so you should this is a good time to take out all your contracts, your form agreements, and your policies, and take a look. Things have changed from a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, or more when you may have had these things drafted. Also, in terms of your standard contracts, those are evolving documents. They are based on legal principles, but also based on your experiences. They're trying to prevent certain things that happened, and so that those issues don't arise again. And so you need to bring out your contracts to have that discussion with your staff about, okay, what issues came up that we weren't necessarily fully protected on, or that we want to make clear so that this does not become an issue in 2013. And so here's your way to kind of close the door on whatever problem issues may have arose may have arisen in 2012. And that's that's an important issue, and that's an important process to go through. Secondly, once you update your contracts, you want to do it in a way that they stand out. And so that you want to make sure that your employees are using the right contracts. So I often tell people, when you do update your contracts, make them look visually different so that you can tell whether or not employees are using the proper contracts. So I want to thank you for joining us on this day. And we will be broadcasting live from Las Vegas, most likely next week. I have just concluded my New Media Expo stint and looking forward to it. Look forward to talking to everyone there. This is a fun and emerging field. And so in addition, we may have some announcements from the Internet Law Center that we'll share on the next show. But this is going to be a fun year. And I thank you for joining us on this first segment. And we're going to have a great ride this year with lots of fun guests, just like last year. I want to thank all our guests from last year. I wish them all a happy new year. It was a fun year. We've had some very interesting people and excuse me, and everyone who was on the show, definitely I would include in my list of heroes, not zeros, from last year. And so, but any event, this is Ben and Kelly broadcasting live from the Internet Law Center in Santa Monica, the heart of Silicon Beach. Hope to talk to you next week. We're calling in from Las Vegas, Nevada. We'll give you the update on New Media Expo. And until then, have a great week. Quarters adjourned, and we will see you next week live from Las Vegas. Thank you.
This has been a presentation of WebmasterRadio.fm, the world's largest business-to-business radio and podcast network. We welcome you to sample past episodes of this program, as well as our complete library of programs, on demand or on the air via our 24/7 live audio stream at www.webmasterradio.fm. The opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of WebmasterRadio.fm's management or sponsors. Any rebroadcast or redistribution without authorized consent of WebmasterRadio.fm is prohibited.